Good afternoon, and welcome to Good News Updates with Living Compassion. I'm pleased to be joined this afternoon by Scott, who's here to speak with us about the Africa Project. Welcome, Scott.
Hi, Lakota.
Hi. Thanks so much for being with us today.
Oh, absolutely. I love it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, so you were part of the Living Compassion team that recently returned from Zambia.
Yes. Yes.
Wow. Ian, I've had the pleasure of recently flipping through the blog and following along and just seeing so many smiling faces, and I project very lit up people.
Yes, exactly. Gosh.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, those smiling faces, boy, that really puts things in perspective, doesn't it?
Oh, boy. Yeah, it sure does.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, and, you know, folks who read along with the blogs, you know, just like, wow, you know, year after year, it just seems like, how did that happen? Or, wow, another major movement, or what success, you know? And it just seemed like this trip was very similar. And I imagine it has a lot to do with folks practicing getting out of the way and let life lead. That was definitely my experience being there.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, how wonderful to be in that process of just getting out of the way and letting life lead. Maybe that could kind of explain the amazing phenomena of every year. So much happens with the project, so many amazing things. It's just, it's hard to even believe. And that year after year, that continues to happen, and it's the same with this year.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, I know this year, and I imagine every year, you know, there's definitely some preparation and some direction heading in. And, of course, you know, the coordinator here, Jen, and the coordinator there, Teresa, are talking on a regular basis. But we don't really know how it's all going to work out, or we don't know what we're going to discover when we get there. But, you know, in this case, we know our focus is the girls' program. And we know that we want to give them the best support that we can. And we know that some girls are having troubles with their exams. So, you know, we just go in, and we ask questions, and we pay attention, and we listen. And things just start to get kind of come together, and they get revealed, and then kind of things drop in about how to structure the program to give girls the attention that they need. In this case, to develop their English language abilities so that they can pass these tests, so they can continue to learn in this educational system. And I don't know, it's just so fun to every day. It's almost just like, you know, for a lot of us in practice, it's just like, I wonder what's going to happen today. You know, I wonder what's going to get revealed today. I wonder how these pieces are going to come together. And just to really be open to that, I don't know. It really calls forth the best in all of us, I project.
Oh.
And
yeah.
I project that's why this program is such a success. It really calls forth the best in everybody.
This program calls forth the best in everybody, and yeah, easy to project. That's why this program is such a huge success. And I love the process that you describe. Just amazing that, you know, there's some general ideas about directions we'd like to go, and there's not a predetermined set plan of exactly what's going to happen. It's a matter of showing up and paying attention and looking to life to receive information, and then taking the next step. And as you were describing that, I just, the word that was coming up for me, one of the words was fun, that just sounds like such a lit up place to be. And then also was generosity. I was flipping through the blog, and on day one, there's this beautiful picture of a quote on the top of a breakfast menu that says, attention is the rarest form of generosity. And that seems to perfectly sum up what you're talking about. That it's such a kindness, such a generosity to not have, you know, not to come with that presupposed, you know, I know, but to pay attention and find out. So, such a generous thing to do.
Yeah. Yeah, and, you know, when you were saying that, you know, the attention, in this case, happens, that presence happens in relationship, you know, which, again, mm-hmm. I project is why another reason this program is so successful is the relationships that are being built, that are being constantly deepened. And it was true for me. You know, I've been following along with the blogs, but I've actually never met any of these folks on down there. But it feels like I have. You know, I get off the plane in Africa. I think that's one of the pictures in there. And I just just automatically, immediately just give Teresa a giant hug, like as if we've known each other forever, because that's how it feels, you know? And then that was just really the process of going around like, oh, hi, Elias. How's your dad doing? You know, we've never met, but I know who his dad is. It's Pascal. That's how Elias got into the cooperative. You know, there's just this this family orientation that's so wonderful. And, you know, with the girls, too, just spending time with them and getting to know them, you know, just it reminds me, it's like, well, so I think if you're following along in the blogs, you know, we had this day of the girls program on a Saturday, and we watched this movie called Queen of Katwe, which is, if you haven't seen it, it's an amazing film and actually a good depiction of some of the circumstances that these kids are living in. But afterwards, we were taking a picture of every girl, and I had the pleasure of doing that. And then afterwards, I was just kind of playing around with the editing on my phone and, you know, making these pictures the best, you know, that I could. And really what was going on was I felt like I was spending some time with each of the girls. You know, I'd been kind of like talking with them and being around them, and then I was really looking at them. And that whole process, what I was seeing, it seems like every time we deepen relationships with people and we bring that presence, you know, what gets revealed is the life force living us all. And there is no longer that those folks over in Africa and these folks here in the States. It just seems like we're all the same person.
Oh, gosh. I just got chills, goosebumps, and some tears. It's just wonderful what you describe. That as you were just talking about that, what was coming in for me was that attention and love are two ways of describing the same experience. That paying that close attention that you described that happens in relationship is an act of love. And it's so wonderful, too, that, you know, for folks that haven't had a chance to go over to Africa, following along in the blog, it's possible to experience that love over here, too. I'm feeling so much love just flipping through the blog and looking at the picture.
Yeah. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And in that place of you know, again, I experienced it, having that love, you know, following along, listening to updates like this, you know, following along in the blog. And, you know, just it's clear, you know, that place that I can find myself in, thinking my well-being is kind of tied up in a taking care of me or mine, is just not so. You know, that child down the block or those girls over in Africa, those are all our kids, you know, and our well-being is all tied up together, you know, and I love that because it just, again, it just, those smiles that you started the conversation about, that experience I was just describing, it really just annihilates any little nattering, complaining, worried about myself kind of voice. It just helps kind of, I guess, see it for what it is, which is a distraction from living in a giant generosity and love, as you were describing. And those kids are just such a mirror back, because it seems I project that they're living from that place. You know, here they are in these circumstances, and as you said, I mean, those are, you know, we're just taking pictures. That's what they do. They smile. You know, that's just where they're coming from. Even though, you know, from our point of view, gosh, life's kind of hard and you don't have it very much. But here they are just beaming. And you can feel that through the pictures.
Just so amazing, those beautiful little smiles and conditions that, gosh, really, really challenging conditions. And it just cuts through all that condition yammy yammy and all that condition story about, you know, looking out for me and mine and that whole story that kind of creates that sense of separation. What you describe, that experience of just the paying attention, the love, the honoring those relationships, recognizing that we're all in it together. They're just inextricably interwoven and connected, that our well-being is completely tied up with every other beings. And it does tend to cut through that conditioned chatter and cuts right to the love, doesn't it?
Yeah, cuts right to the love. And I wonder, just listening to you reflect that, that seems to kind of inform the way the structure of the girls program has been evolving. So, you know, we're going to be having a place for the girls to receive more attention, individual attention. So, you know, kind of the old framework is a teacher stands in front of the classroom and, you know, well, when they go to government school, they're talking about 70 kids in the classroom and one teacher standing up and they're copying off the board. And, you know, and what we're moving towards is basically pods of five or six girls with a teacher with each pod. And it's not, it's so obviously when they get that time after the government school, an hour of helping with homework, an hour of reading time, they're going to get that one-on-one support, you know. And then the other great thing is that teacher is really going to watch and look after and be able to give that care and attention, not just in those 2 hours, but all the time. So following up with them, you know, checking in on are they going to school, maybe checking in with the family, and just really, really paying attention to them, really, really having an opportunity to love them in that kind of way. So that's really wonderful. Yeah.
It sure is. Wow. Yeah, it brings me back to that quote again, that attention is the rarest form of generosity. Gosh, how lucky are we that we have this awareness practice and that we have so much to offer, so much to receive.
So much to offer, so much to receive.
Yeah.
We're over time here, huh?
Yeah. This conversation is so fun. We could just keep going and going. But we are at time. Thank you so much for being with us today.
Welcome. Absolutely. Yeah. Thank you, Lakota.
Take care. Good night.
Good night.
All right, Michael, we'll turn it over to you and Sherry.
Wonderful. Thank you, Lakota. And thank you, Scott. Good afternoon, and welcome to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Good afternoon, Sherry.
Good afternoon, Michael. How are you doing?
I'm great. I'm great. How are you?
I'm good. I love that conversation. I love that. I just love everything about that conversation. I'm so inspired to get there again myself because I want to have that experience Scott is talking about.
Yes.
And it's gorgeous where we are, and I have spent the afternoon actually looking at possible locations for the Zen Center in Mountain View. And that makes me extremely happy, as you can imagine. Nothing yet. Which reminds me, we sent out a little survey asking people about the monastery, and if people haven't had a chance to fill that out, I hope you will pretty soon and get it back to us so that we keep having a good sense of what the Sangha has in mind for the future of practice like that. So, it's great. It's a wonderful life and a wonderful day and a wonderful life. Tell me about you.
I'm great. I'm great. I'm also excited about the Mountain View Zen Center. As you can imagine, excited about the Africa trip and the blog. Reading the blog was great. And I loved the idea that love and attention are the same thing.
Yes. and we can feel it, can't we? I mean, it's one of those kind of things that, never thought about that. But when we do stop and think about it, it's like, that's how it feels.
Yes, yes.
Mm-hmm.
I know when somebody is giving me their full attention, I just feel very free and open, and I tend to talk and talk and talk, and it's a real gift.
Mm-hmm, yeah. Yeah. So, good times.
Good times, good times. And I have some announcements here, unless you have more to share with us.
No, those are all my announcements.
Okay, great. Reflective Listening Buddies is a powerful weekly support for conscious, compassionate awareness, requiring participants to show up to practice being present. And a new quarter begins April 15th.
I love that date. I just love it that those coincide. I think it's just, we need all the positive things we can have on April 15th. Huh?
Yes, yes. And the upcoming practice weekend, March 31 through April 2nd, is an opportunity to get away from the daily routine and deepen awareness practice by participating in the monastic schedule. From Friday evening group with the guide to Sunday morning group with the community, participants enjoy practice support in the peace and beauty of the Zen Monastery Peace Center near Murphy's, California.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yes, and a new email class with you, Sherry, starting April 4th will assist in the exploration of beliefs and assumptions, karmic tendencies, and identities that prevent us from accessing unconditional love and acceptance. Whether struggling to make sense of the political climate or any other thorny challenge, this class will ask you to explore the context from which it is possible to see through the eyes of love.
Yes. And this, I don't know, are you getting ready to say it's that Socratic method again?
No, that's not in there, but I did read that.
Yes. Yes, it is. And so for people who did that, it was very, very popular. And so that's this format again, where it's just going to be a back and forth between me and whomever. So you're going to tell me what's going on with you, and I'm going to speak directly back to you. It's all going to be anonymous, of course, as it always is, but it'll be a direct conversation rather than everybody's addressing a topic and speaking to that, and then I speak back to that. It's the individual focus.
Yes.
That makes sense, Michael? Okay, good.
Yeah, I was just thinking of an example, and that is when I'm writing about how I'm stuck in this content, you will helpfully remind me of the process of suffering and how to get out of that.
That's right. And so if you wanted to look at, say, your issues with chronic pain, then for the entire length of the class, you and I would be in a back and forth conversation. So you would write to me about that. I would offer some perspective or place to look or way to practice with it. You would do that for a period of time, 48 hours or 72 hours or whatever it is. And then you would write back to me what you're seeing about that. And then I would write back to you. So it's like an ongoing guidance appointment over the course of that month.
Yes, and I think I read in the description that the encouragement is to pick one topic and stay with that focus.
Yeah,
is that right?
Yeah, just because when we do that, of course, we have a chance to go so much deeper, right? So if this time you ask me about, one of the kids, and then you ask me something about, tell me what you're seeing in your marriage. And then the next time it's, money. And then we never really go in, have a chance to get very deep with any process. Yeah. And so that's really what we want to do.
Great. Great.
Yeah. Yeah. Fun.
Wonderful. And I have a couple more announcements here.
Okay.
The UR Practice Retreat, April 8th through 15th, is a chance to step away from the pressures of day-to-day living and immerse yourself in a monastic community completely focused on waking up. The retreat features individualized support with what you choose as your practice focus for the week. And the retreat is a prerequisite for first-time visiting monks.
Yeah, so that's interesting, isn't it? It's the same premise. That retreat does the same thing. Instead of all of us are looking at one topic, which can be extremely helpful. This year we've been looking at fear on retreats, and that's very helpful. But with that particular retreat, you get to come there and say, well, what I want to work on for this week is X, and then all week long you'll be supported in a monastic environment to work on that particular topic.
Great. Mm-hmm. And for a not-to-miss opportunity to do the courageous work of ending self-hate, sign up now for the There Is Nothing Wrong With You retreat, April 26th through May 3rd at the Zen Monastery Peace Center near Murphy's, California. This foundational retreat is perfect for awareness practice beginners as well as experienced practitioners.
Mm-hmm.
And for these and other opportunities, visit schedule.livingcompassion.org.
Mm-hmm.
And if you'd like to talk with Sherry today, you can make a show by pressing *6 and then 1. That will put you in the queue. And a 5-minute conversation on one topic would be great.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Are you ready, Sherry?
I'm ready.
Okay, here we go. First caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hello, Sherry and Michael. This is Jeff calling from South Dakota.
Hey, Jeff. Hello, Jeff.
Well, I'm calling because I called a couple months ago or 3 months ago,
mm-hmm.
and I wanted to report on kind of what I saw. I'm still working on job issues, and the last time we spoke, I had mentioned that I'd had some interviews, but I didn't ever seem to land the jobs. And you suggested to ask the people why they didn't select me, and
mm-hmm.
Which was a good thing. It seemed like a simple thing, but I really hadn't thought of it that way. And since it's South Dakota, it's kind of we're not really forward here about things, and I hadn't.
It's not the California experience.
No, it's the people are very shy here, and they always would just say, "Well, you did a great job. It just wasn't the right match." That's what they will always say. So, I just did some reflecting and talking to my wife and a friend of mine, and then it just came to me that the reason that I wasn't getting interviews, getting selected, was that for the most part, I come across as aloof and troubled and a little bit with a chip on my shoulder, which I haven't.
Tell me how that was imparted to you. How did you come to that? Because that could sound a little judgmental, but I'm not sensing that you saw it that way.
Well, yes, well, initially, I thought it was pretty judgmental, and of myself. But then I just, tried to be honest about how I come across a lot of times, and
mm-hmm.
Part of my reaction was, well, of course I'm aloof and troubled and have kind of a chip on my shoulder. I came from an extremely traumatic childhood where my mom was really did things that were demonic, really, and had to dig myself out for years and worked in a mental hospital for a while. Instead of being a patient, you go and work there and then you get the therapy
right.
with the patients.
Right.
So,
get the treatment kind of by osmosis.
Yeah.
Or we can get to, well, I'm not nearly as crazy as they are, so I guess I'm okay.
and that helps a little bit too.
Right.
That you can think, well, at least I'm not here, but I am here. So,
but I am. Yeah.
Yeah. So that is my more personality is to be detached and observe things. And, my wife mentioned, she said, well, your aloofness and kind of chip on your shoulder never interfered with you getting jobs in journalism. And I said, well, I know, because most reporters are troubled and aloof, too. And it comes in handy when you have to ask hard questions and
be distant and objective.
Yes, and all of those things, and a way to feel like you're making a contribution to society. Because I know a lot of media people are pretty negative, but in South Dakota, we're typically not that. The towns are just too small, and we have to see each other. I don't want to go back to journalism because it's just changed so much, and I had a bad experience with my last job, and so then I had this thing, well, I don't want to do that, so I want to be less aloof and troubled and happier, and so I did have one interview since we last talked, and it went, I was more relaxed than I ever have been, but then I got a call and they said, well, we're not going to hire anybody right now, we're just going to put this position on hold. So I go, okay, well, I'm still.
And so, Jeff, does it feel like just having this in your conscious awareness is sort of changing your orientation to the whole process?
It feels like it is changing it, but on the other hand, I still struggle with what direction to go, what kind of jobs to pursue, and I've had that for a very long time. It's almost like when I think of what kind of job would I like, sort of thing, it's almost like a curtain comes down and I can't get a sense of it. So then I just go to this default mode, which is, well, let's apply for things that you have some education in or you've done before, but there's not like a sense of, oh, I really want to do X.
Yeah. Well, and, you know, I bet the world is full of people who are not going to a job that is the X mm-hmm. in that sentence.
Mm-hmm.
So I wonder, of course, if the more important thing to focus on is not which job you would like to do, but how you want to be in your life. Because it seems to me that when you get to the how you want to be in your life, mm-hmm. the other question might be more readily answered.
Yes.
So the practical application is that if you know that you have a tendency to be these ways, mm-hmm. first of all, I would say that given the childhood that you describe, rather than being aloof and with a chip on your shoulder and troubled, as a result of that, you could be wildly happy that you have survived that.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Yes. Yeah, I do.
It's not the ordinary way to look at those things, but it is helpful because otherwise a person can just survive hideous circumstances just fine and spend the rest of their lives feeling victimized by the fact that it happened in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
So we don't want to do that. That's not our choice. So if you know that you don't want to be aloof and troubled and with a chip on your shoulder, then everywhere in your life you can practice not being that. Not just in a job interview, but why would you want to be those things anytime?
Right.
Right?
Right, yeah.
I've been
trying to live that more, and I do feel some kind of space from that, and I maybe it's just a you know, continued persistence and practice, and 'cause like things will things, the egocentric karmic conditioning or whatever will come and periodically, well, I do some yoga and some little body work things to try to integrate things and be aware of my body. And one day after, this wasn't totally related to the yoga, but I think related to this kind of bringing awareness to being aloof and troubled and chip on my shoulder, that I just had like pain in my back that was just stripe lines, like when the belt would hit me. And then, you know, now I go, well, I come back to the breath. There's nothing threatening. There's nothing bad right now. It's just, you know, it's a sensation. Don't put a story on it. But then it's hard to, it just kind of scary. And then it makes me not want to be as aware, but I know there's really no choice.
Okay, here's the deal. Here's the cut and the chase deal.
Okay.
Recording and listening is the secret to your success. Because trying to do what you're trying to do on your own, just using the mind that knows how to do this whole thing so much better than you do,
mm-hmm.
is not the fast track to being the person we choose to be and having the life we choose to have. It's just not. Because the mind that you're turning to work through these things is the one that is extremely invested in having everything stay the same as it is, even though it'll talk to you nonstop about things being different.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah?
Yes.
So okay. When... Yeah. And again, I say this all the time, but I never get tired of saying the same thing. So that's a good trait in my job. That if you want to make these changes quickly, then what you will do is listen to what you want to have as your experience all the time. And so that, for those of us who want not to live in egocentric karmic conditioning self-hate, what that translates into is learning to live in a conversation of this minute, right now.
Mm-hmm.
And so those are the recordings that we listen to, the recordings that bring us right here, bring us to the breath, to the moment, to the present, to what I'm seeing, hearing, tasting, smelling, touching. Okay, and being right here with this, what that tends to do for us, of course, is to make us feel very lit up, because the moment is a lit up place to be. But if we start noodling around there in conditioned mind, we may not be in any kind of a terribly negative place, but we're doing the maintenance work for the negativity. Because, do you see what I mean?
Yeah. So kind of taking all that theory that I've learned from your books and from archives and things, and then trying to combat that in my head, it's not going to be as successful as
no.
recording
That's right.
and listening more than I currently do.
That's right. Yeah. You want to record and listen as much of the time as you want to be free. It's the equivalent of only floss the teeth you wish to save. Okay? Record and listen only as much as you want liberation in your life.
Mm.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right? So, yeah. So, you can do your yoga, and then you put in the earbuds. You don't get into a conversation about what's happening in the body and what it means and a story and not to be in the story or to be in the story. Or you just put in the earbuds and you're here.
Mm-hmm.
Life will inform you
of everything that is helpful, everything that you need to know. We never have to think about any of it. The mind is a dangerous place to be.
Yeah, I believe that.
All right?
I believe that.
Yeah. All right. Well, you try that and let me know, okay?
All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yep. Thank you. Take care. Bye. Good night.
Thanks for joining us, Jeff. Sherry, I appreciate Jeff calling in regularly and seeing the process over time and taking your guidance and hearing how that works and getting the next iteration. It's really fabulous.
Yeah. It's practice in process, right?
Yes.
It's a perfect look at how it, well, it's the your practice retreat or it's the Socratic email class.
Exactly.
Right? It's
exactly.
Yeah. So we here I am. Okay, well, how about this? You might look at this and incorporate that. I do that. Come back. This is where I am now. Oh, okay. Well, you might try this and look at that.
Yes.
Yeah.
Great.
Very good.
Great.
Mm-hmm.
And we have another caller here.
All right. Thank you.
You're welcome. Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, Sherry. Hi, Michael. This is Monica calling.
Hi.
Hello, Monica. How are you doing?
I'm good, thank you. Actually, this is my first time calling into open air. I called into the weekly radio show, but this is my open air first.
Oh, so you that's right. I've talked to you in the morning, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
In the afternoon.
Mm-hmm. I remember. So welcome. Welcome.
Thank you. So my question is about, well, I've really been enjoying the Project Joy radio show. It's been really, really helpful, and it's really been helpful to sort of kind of what you were talking about with the previous caller in practicing what I want to be, like, what do I want my life to be? What do I want to focus on? And it really has been just amazing. Like many people have called in and reported. But I kind of wanted to bring it back to the political climate and, what's going on with the current administration and sort of how that ties into, So mostly it's best for me not to pay attention to that because my current strategy is to sort of ignore the news. And partly because what I recognize is some of the things that you've said along the way, nothing really has changed, and getting into panic doesn't help anybody, including me. So I'm just sort of choosing.
with whatever is going on, right? Panic
exactly.
is never a good strategy to adopt. Yes.
Exactly. Yeah. And my body, like physiology, can go into like fight or flight panic mode pretty easily. So anyway,
mm-hmm.
I try to avoid mm-hmm. stimulus a little bit. But a couple things have arisen around it is that At the end of the day, nothing has really changed, and my life is probably not going to be affected by whatever is going on in Washington. I mean, unless there's like a nuclear war or something. And I can sort of go there in the worst case scenario. But what's helping and also making me question is that things haven't changed, and even under the previous administration, there's more homeless people, there's more people in poverty, or it seems. There's tent
yep.
cities popping up everywhere in the Bay Area. And, you know,
mm-hmm.
for those of us, the rest of us have to walk by that and have our fears and anxieties and sadnesses and suffering and projections and what have you. So, that also sort of ties on to what's been going on in the radio show about suffering and other people suffering and is it really my suffering or is it their suffering? But my question is, if people don't know that they're suffering, I mean, it looks like suffering to live on the street and to not have the same skill set, to not have the skill set that's required to function in society the way that I think
you can
would be,
and I can.
That I can. That's different. There's a different.
Yeah.
There's a different reality
yeah.
going on for a lot of people
yeah.
in the world, and that's
yep.
difficult for me. That's difficult for me to witness and. Yeah. So anyway, I choose to work in that direction, or you know, try to work in the areas that will maybe impact that. But what about? And everything's fine, right? But what about for the people who it isn't fine? So if I were a Muslim
well,
or undocumented.
And if I may, Monica, you
yeah.
are one of those people, right? Because you can't watch the news.
Right.
Right? I mean, that's kind of funny to consider. But when we do, we realize, okay, I'm fine. I'm fine as long as I don't have anything to do with what's going on in the world. And that's kind of an iffy definition of fine.
Well, I hear what you're saying, but I just to clarify, everybody's panicking. I'm almost to the point where I can watch it and be fine because I think it's all, I don't really know what's true or what's really happening, and it's just, you know, I don't think it's useful, I guess, is what I say. It's not, I don't get too riled up anymore because, but then am I just ignoring everything?
And that, to me, takes us back to what you were talking about, that it's true, nothing has changed. You know, increasingly, I don't know if this is true, but it seems like it's true. Every year, more people fall into poverty. Fewer people, recently, more people, but soon fewer people apparently will have medical coverage. More children live without enough to eat and without medical coverage, right? That sort of thing. So this has been going on forever, right? Everything just gets more and more expensive. More people are left behind. So that's been true, right? But I think the thing that is helpful for all of us to look at is why wasn't that a problem for me
before? Yeah.
And
well,
now it is.
Actually, well, the way I would answer that is it's always been a problem, but I've been, it may be too anxious, but I think because of practice, I can see it more, and I can, I'm learning a ton, and I'm just like, the more I learn about disparities and the more I learn about how it's set up, it's like one of the people that I follow, it's like, it's not a broken system. It's actually a system that's operating exactly the way it's supposed to work. It's only benefiting a few people. That's how it's supposed to work, you know. So I it's not broken. It's actually functioning exactly like the machine that it is, you know. So
yeah.
So your question is, I am building resilience to be able to look at it more and to be able to see what I can do, and I do attribute that to practice. It's not that it suddenly became a problem. So much, but
which is to be fair, what seems to have happened for a lot of people, right?
Mm-hmm.
It all of those same issues were there, but it wasn't threatening in the same way. I wasn't personally threatened by what was going on,
right?
And so for a lot of people, that's been the panic moment: is oh my God, I'm now one of those people. I'm now joining the ranks of the endangered.
Yeah, it's not mine because I actually work with people who really are endangered, so I don't really put myself in that category. I mean, I have people who won't come to appointments because they're afraid they're going to get deported. I have people who, you know, don't have a place to live when, you know, I mean, I don't really feel like I'm the threatened group. But I do have more concern for the people that are threatened and what can they do. Well, I can call into the radio show, right? And I can take the Project Joy class, and I can not watch the news or whatever, right? But
yes, you have choices. That's back to your point of being more privileged than a lot of other people in our society and around the world.
Right. And that, it has always been the case. And I guess I'm not so interested in why it wasn't. It's always sort of been important to me, which is why I do the work that I do. But I do feel more urgent for other people. And what, and yeah. And then is that just a projection of, like, of course I would feel better if everybody was safe and everybody had a house, but that's not going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
So if someone suffering, so, if someone doesn't know that they have a way out of suffering, are they still okay and adequate to their lives? I mean, are they adequate to their lives?
Well, now, so there are two things going on here, right? One, we're talking strictly from a spiritual perspective, right?
Mm-hmm.
And from a strictly spiritual perspective, we would have to say yes. As people who follow a practice that is based in an experience of a non-separate reality. So the way that people can most easily understand that is, if everything is that which is, all that is, Buddha, mind, God, if everything is that oneness, then there is nothing that's going to happen to anything that isn't under the jurisdiction of that one.
Right.
Yeah? Okay. Now,
yeah.
So from a strictly spiritual perspective, yes. Now, within that, then, we have the place that we're talking about, which is, okay, here you are, and we call you a node of intelligence, right? I'm a node of intelligence. You're a node of, all right? And so in the level of consciousness for that node of intelligence, there is an awareness, a sensitivity to other nodes. Now, there are a lot of nodes who are completely unaware of other nodes. And if they are aware of them, not really concerned or care about. And in fact, in some, the, you know, the Buddha taught greed, hate, and delusion is the juice of this plane of existence, right? So there are nodes who would see other nodes as something to take advantage of, something to use and exploit and even abuse for pleasure, entertainment, profit, whatever it is that goes on, right? So when we look at that and we begin to sense all of these levels of consciousness or nodes of intelligence, at different levels of awareness or whatever it is, in that oneness, then we find ourselves in a place of, and this is, you know, again, this is Eastern philosophy, so anybody who is violently opposed to that is not going to be interested in exploring this, but I know you are not violently opposed. So we find ourselves in this place of saying, all right, here's a karmic orientation. Let's introduce that and say that these different nodes of intelligence are at different levels of conscious awareness based on karma. All right, so you have a karma to be of a certain ethnicity, a certain intelligence, socioeconomic background, levels of opportunity, possibilities. Okay, and there you are. Now, did you choose any of that? No. No, it's karmic, right? You just happen to be born into these circumstances. Then you also have things that you're really challenged by and troubled by. And so you work through those and you're drawn to awareness practice and you practice and you're waking up and this is all going on, right? So you get to a certain point of realizing that karma goes in two directions, right? And so we're either cleaning it up or we are accumulating more. Now, it is true in the strictest sense that everything is karma, right? And very often we can be doing things that we think are great, good karma things to be doing, and we have no idea of the unintended harm that's happening or, unfortunate, let's not say harm, let's say unfortunate consequences or things that we wish weren't happening, right? But here you are, and you're in this place where you realize that you are not separate from anything else, and you are in an interconnected reality, and everything that you do affects everything else. So that brings us to a place of questioning, well, then how do I want to be? What do I want to do? I have choices. And what kind of choices do I want to make? Right? And for me, so I'll just cut to the chase and tell you what that is for me. I want to be as unconditionally loving as I can be. I want to be in unconditional love. Yeah?
Yeah.
So then, if that's the case, and each person, you know, gets to choose whatever it is for them, and everybody is choosing whether they know it or not. They were all choosing moment by moment. It's just some people are conscious of their choice, and some people are not conscious of their choice. That doesn't change whether the choice is being made. So if I don't care what happens to you, I may not even know that you exist, and I don't care. There's karma in that. If I choose to be as much as possible in unconditional love, then that's what I'm choosing. That doesn't mean that I am going to care about you in a way that actually is meaningful or helpful to you. Yeah? So when you look out at the world and you see people who are in circumstances that would be very, very difficult for you if you were in them, then what we know is you are suffering over that. We don't actually know whether they are suffering. We have no idea. If somebody tells us they're not suffering, we don't know that they're not. If somebody tells us they are suffering, we don't know that they are. Okay? The one experience that you can have is yours. So you suffer.
Even if someone says, I'm suffering, help me, help me, help me, we still don't know if they're suffering.
No, we don't, because did you remember the Ram Dass quote that we had recently in the morning call about people living in a hell, a comfortable hell, and choosing it? So very often, people will say, help me, help me, help me, and then you say, okay, here, do this, and they say, no, I don't want that help. That's not the help I want. I want you to help me the way I want to be helped.
Yeah.
So, maybe yes, maybe no, we don't know. We never actually know. We are, if you're like me, you're challenged to know about yourself, let alone what is so and true for somebody else. So it's hurting your heart that this is going on in these people's lives, right? It's hurting your heart. So to me, now we're putting those two things together. And this is what I find to be such a great opportunity for people right now, living in this country with everything that's going on. Can you participate from a place of unconditional love, making a difference in the places where you are suffering? Did that all hang together?
Yeah. I mean, that's the goal. Yeah, that's the goal. I mean, sometimes I'm like wondering if I,
That's the goal, right?
Yeah, that's the goal. I guess it all hangs together, and that's the goal.
Yes, because I can say, you know, I just don't want to be involved because it's, you know, I don't want to know what's going on in that larger context because it's just too upsetting to me. Mm-hmm. Well, can I stay in unconditional love? Because we're all nodes, right? So can I stay in a place of unconditional love? And can I say to you, whether I say it out loud to you or not, I love you unconditionally. There is that's my goal, and I disagree with what you're doing, and so I'm going in a different direction.
Yeah, you know, what I just recognized through this conversation is that what I want is for everyone to have practice. Everyone.
Yes.
I want to, like, give everyone your phone number.
Right. Only give it to the people who really want it, okay?
Yeah, that's the thing. It's like I have access to this, and it's been so helpful to me in my suffering, and it's also helped me to be more willing to help and look for ways to be involved and look for ways to participate.
Without adding to suffering.
Without adding to suffering, exactly. And then and I see that there's an unexamined part of that is like the solution is to get all these people hooked into practice, you know, and then the world will be fine. But I see that's just my projection of what will be.
Well, it might not happen in this lifetime. And the fact that it might not happen in this lifetime doesn't mean it's not a worthy goal.
Yeah. Well,
right?
It brings to, yeah. Yes, that's true. You can't look at it's not all or none, but
yes.
It's like Mother Teresa says, like, well, I saved this one, you know, whatever. You just look at what's in front of you and you can't think about the whole.
That's exactly right. Because here's the non-separate reality part of that, Monica. What is right in front of you is the whole.
Right. Right.
Now, that's that, you know, that kind of Zen paradox that conditioned mind just goes tilt and people say, I can't deal with this.
Yeah.
But when you see that that is really true, the whole universe is in this one act.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Then we see the importance of it. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I hope we can keep this conversation going. Was there more?
Can I ask one last question? So, can anyone call into open air?
Yes, of course.
Do you have to be like oriented in some way or have some kind
of.
Nope.
That's my job
to try it.
To field it. That's my practice. That's what makes my practice so exciting, right? So, you know, I'm glad that you brought this up because when right after the election. And everybody in the Sangha, it seems, I don't know, the people who were happy with what happened didn't contact us. But the people who were very unhappy did. And so we started the Seeing Through the Eyes of Love radio show that has morphed into the Project Joy for this year. And that kind of, because that's so focused on a particular thing that we're all looking at together, there's really no room for this conversation. And so it just kind of disappeared, and it began to feel as if people were becoming just quietly more depressed, right? Mm-hmm. And so I did wish that the people who wanted to bring this particular topic, I mean, we deal with money, and we deal with sex, and we deal with health, and we deal with children, and with marriage, and you know, all kinds of things that are in people's lives. Do I stay in this relationship? Do I leave it? You know, do I take this job? Do I not? How do I, you know, we talk about everything in people's lives, and we weren't talking about this. So mm-hmm. I know that people talk to me one-on-one, those people who have my phone number, right? And yet it's not a Sangha-wide discussion. It's not part of our large, hey, I'm living in the world and my relationships are fine and money is okay and I like my job, but this other thing is going on. So I'm glad to have that come into this open-air discussion. Yes, So people will pick up a book in a used bookstore, right, and call into open air. So everybody welcome.
Okay, good for that. Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you,
yeah.
Sherry. Thank
All right.
you, Michael.
Thank you, Monica.
You're welcome.
See you next week. Okay. Bye.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Thanks for joining us, Monica. Sherry, we have about 10 minutes left, and I can play our coaching ad, or I could skip it and give a little more time to our last caller here.
Let's do that. I bet the coaches will be fine. Everybody who's steeped in practice and wants more support and doesn't have a coach, contact us and get signed up with a coach. It's the best support, best way to deepen your practice that I know of. I mean, right behind recording and listening, and your coach will help you with that. So, yes.
Great. And there was our coaching ad.
Exactly. I should do this for a living.
Yeah. And here we go with our next caller.
All right.
You are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, Sherry and Michael. This is Rebecca calling from Philadelphia.
Hi.
Well, hello, Rebecca.
Hi. I can't believe that I had the courage to actually do this. I've never called into the radio show before, so thank you for having
me. Well, welcome. How's that heart? You feel like it's kind of the equivalent of you just ran a mile at a good pace?
Yes, it's definitely racing, yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Good. That's the way to be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I want to make it a habit now because listening to it live is a whole different experience, really, than listening to it on the archives. It was just such a wonderful experience to hear the two conversations so far. So thank you.
Oh, good, good. Yeah. Well, we'd love to be one of your habits.
Yes, yes, yes. You guys have been, and this will be another one. So thank you so much. Mm-hmm. Well, my question was a little bit along the lines of. Some of what Monica was bringing up around politics, and I'm trying to think how to ask it in the right way because it was all put into a lot of, I think, context by the conversation in the beginning of the hour about Zambia. So my question was kind of about how sometimes being involved on the left or being a little bit involved can make you feel bad. That's sort of where I'm at. I think my karma is around guilt, probably. Yeah. So like a lot of guilt around privilege. And so that sometimes will come up for me around being involved on the left, especially I think there's a new era, it seems, with people who are younger to be very, there's like a lot more conversation even than when I was coming up in the 90s, like in college. There's even more conversation around like intersectionality and white privilege. And so I sometimes just don't know how to, I don't know. I don't know how to feel without feeling bad.
So the wonderful thing is that you know that without all this, you would probably still feel bad, right? Because somebody's going to say something, and you're going to because it's really true in every area of our lives. It's just kind of a funny thing to consider. So in every area of your life. There are a large number of people on this planet who aren't as privileged as you are.
Right, right. Mm-hmm.
There are tons of people who are less intelligent, tons of people who have less initiative, tons who have less ambition, tons who have more fear, tons who have, right? So, you know, if we want to feel bad about something, then there's plenty to feel bad about. Mm-hmm. Or we could take the other perspective that everybody, first of all, I like to go to the everybody is equal to their life.
Okay.
Right? We are all where we are having our own experience. And I think Monica was pointing to it a little bit with the, you know, if we try to take somebody's experience away from them, that's not going to be popular. Because we all want to have our own life experience. So I don't want you to take me off the street and put me in a nice house, right? I might say I do, but I'll bet you anything before too long I'm going to find a way not have that experience because either I just don't want to live there, that is not my, you know, that's not my orientation, that's not my perspective, or I want to get there on my own. I don't want you to give me something. I want to make my own way. Now, I know people's conditioned minds are screaming all over the world as I say these kinds of things. But if anybody wants to do an experiment, you know, you could just walk down the street, find a homeless person, put them in a nice apartment and see how it goes. You know, just to see if all of our projections are accurate.
Interesting. Uh-huh.
Right? All right. So, so feeling bad is the first thing we got to quit. We really do. Because I don't know about you, I didn't ask to be white.
Right.
I didn't. It's really not my fault. And I didn't ask for any of the other things that go on in my life any more than anybody else did. And so to be blamed for that is just, you know, is just silly. And it also says that the only oppressors on the earth are white.
Right.
And that's not true. That's not even close to true. We can look throughout the history of humanity all over the world and realize that there's a certain segment of the population who chooses to oppress.
That's true.
Yeah, you don't have to just be white and living in the United States. Or Great Britain, our allies in this particular guilt. So, yeah, so when we follow those things back, they're just silly, okay? And that it's the kind of silliness that conditioned mind likes to indulge in. It, along with the thing that, again, we were talking with Monica about at the very end, you know, conditioned mind will say, if you can't end poverty for everyone, why do anything?
Right,
you know, whatever
exactly.
you're doing is not enough. It's not going to make a difference, so don't do anything. Well, that's great for a dualistic mind, but it doesn't actually address any issue.
Well, I feel like maybe am I running out of time pretty much?
Well, I just want to me, that's job one. Is to get ourselves to the place of using these minds that we've been given to see how that whole process is silly.
Truly silly.
Not just nonsense, but truly silly. That it just doesn't hold up. So now we have this privilege. We do. What are we going to do with it?
You know, okay, that's
in the spiritual world, one of the things that people have a lot of trouble with is money. So you want money, you should have money, but you should feel bad because you've got more money than other people. You've probably run into that.
Yeah, I hear that from people, and I feel that once in a while.
So you want it because you should have it, but then you feel bad because you have it. Because every time you see somebody who doesn't have as much as you do, you have to feel bad. And so money gets a very bad reputation. And yet the people who are able to keep the systems running that so many people struggle with, what do those people have a lot of? Money. And so if money is a bad, evil thing, and only people have it who are going to use it for things that, say, you don't agree with, it's not what you would choose to spend money on if you had a lot of money, then maybe it would behoove you to look at whether it's money that's the problem or what people do with money that's the problem. If you decide it's what people do with money that's the problem and you want to do something different, then it would be smart to get the money that you need to do this thing that you want to do because you think it would make the world a better place. Would it?
Mm-hmm.
We don't know. Mm-hmm. But the only way to find out is for you to do it.
Okay, that's helpful. Yeah, that's very helpful. Right, so just like the guilt is never the way through. Is that?
Guilt is just, as it says in the key, you know, it's just a stick that's used to beat us. That's all.
Mm-hmm.
It's just ego using something. And so as long, here's my way of dealing with guilt. As long as you're willing to feel guilty, there will always be something to feel guilty about.
Mm-hmm.
Just
okay.
Stop it. Just stop it. Every time it comes up, to just say, that is silly. I am not going to give any more of my life force to that. It is just silly. It, you know, if guilt fed people, if guilt housed and clothed people and guilt gave them a good life, got them a good education and a good job, I would say, Rebecca, go for it. Generate as much of it as you possibly can, right? Because it's really serving a need here.
Right.
But it doesn't do anything. Just doesn't do anything. Doesn't do anything. Mm-hmm. So we just have to say no. Just say no to guilt.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. I think I just needed that motivational speech and that permission maybe.
Right. Yeah. And again, it's one of those things where if it all goes bad, when we find out no, guilt really was the answer, we can always go back to it. It's not like it's not going to be unavailable to us.
Right, it'll still be there. Right.
Okay. It'll still be there. We can take it up at any point. It'll be ready. It'll be volunteering. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Okay.
All right.
Good. Thank you so much.
Yeah. Yeah. And now that you're familiar with this, maybe you'll be part of keeping this conversation going because, gosh, for young people to feel bad and guilty instead of really being able to jump in and use their gifts and talents to make the world, again, the way they want it to be, which is not to say it's the way it should be or even a better way. But if we're doing the best that we can do from the best place that we can find to do it, this is a helpful thing for us.
Thank you.
And who knows, maybe for somebody else.
Yeah.
All right. So don't be a stranger,
Thank you. Okay. Thank you so much. Okay. All right.
Thank
Bye.
You.
Good night.
Good night.
Okay. Good night.
Thanks for joining us, Rebecca. And wow, those were some amazing conversations, Sherry.
Yeah. This is good, isn't it? There's so much that we can, there's so much we all have to offer. And we just got to get out of that negative conversation in the head so that life can use us. You know, St. Francis, make me an instrument of peace. Use me.
Yeah.
Use me. I have these gifts and talents. Please use them for the benefit of all. The merit in the daily recollection, the merit for all good acts, I do freely offer to all beings.
All beings.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's where we are. Well, thank you, sir, for being there week in and week out to make these conversations possible. I so appreciate it, and I know countless other people do too.
Wonderful. And thank you for being here every week.
My pleasure. And it's a joy. All right. Take care, Michael. Talk to you soon.
You too. Okay. Good night.
Bye-bye.